Welcome to another episode of the PhotoFacts Podcast. I'm Jim Felder.
I'm Robert Trawick.
Go, Robert.
Go, Jim. Go. Go for touchdown.
We're at it again. Here we are.
The eagle has landed.
We are doing a virtual podcast again. Robert is at home, and I am at home. I'm still in my shorts and a t-shirt.
Yes. Now, should I tell you tonight what you're missing for dinner?
No. Do not tell me.
Let me just tell you the dessert. Okay. All right? So my favorite dessert is pineapple upside down cake. Oof. I love pineapple upside down cake. It's like my favorite. My second favorite, my mother used to make this amazing banana pudding, you know, with the vanilla wafers all the way around the inside with the meringue on top. And Terry has decided to make that for me today.
Mm. Great. Great wife.
Yes. Yes. I'm just saying. So how are things going with you? This week has been kind of crazy for me. I've actually picked up a few little commercial shoots that gave a little bit of CPR to my bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. I've just been steady shooting real estate, shooting a lot of virtual tours with 3D. That's helped the bank account, but it's still not quite, quite getting the bills paid on time. So I'm just saying.
Like, because you're normally shooting like 50 houses a month, if not more.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing a pretty solid 15 to 20 houses a week.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so I know the times right now. I know there's a lot of people that don't want to, they're not wanting to show their homes if they're still living in it. So now you're probably pretty much just doing like empty houses, right?
No, I've done some occupied houses. They sometimes will request, you know, that I wear a mask, and I just do it anyway, just out of courtesy and for myself. I've got some gloves. I finally got some rubber gloves in the mail from auto gloves. You know, they're auto mechanic gloves. They're black. They're really cool. So anyway,
but they're not disposable, right?
Oh yeah, they are disposable. Yeah, they're rubber gloves.
Okay, why did you have to go order those?
Now,
those
things because like I can't find any anywhere. There's no rubber gloves anywhere.
AutoZone and O'Reilly's is like packed with them. I was just in there like a day ago.
Really?
Yes. People are going to Walmart and Target and all these big stores, but they're failing to go to the parts stores to get rubber gloves mechanic would wear.
I was going to do that, but I think I looked online. Yeah, I looked online on their website and it didn't show any. But anyway, that's not photography news. I'm just kidding. So let me do one thing.
Sorry, do we sound like Boo Ray and Gary?
Stop. Let me do one thing before we bring our awesome guest on. You'll never guess who we've got on coming up. So
just, I know.
All right, stand by.
It's banana pudding.
Okay. Anyway.
This podcast was recorded on the Rodecaster Pro, the world's first fully integrated podcast production console. With 4 mic channels, 8 sound pads for triggering effects and music, the ability to bring in phone and Skype calls, and powerful onboard audio processing. It's the perfect solution whether you're just getting into podcasting or you're a seasoned pro.
You got to love Ryan.
Oh, he's awesome.
Great job. He's amazing. We love those guys over at Rode.
Yep. So
we have great microphones.
So we've been doing editorial all month, right? For the month of April.
Yes.
We're in the last episode for April. And
it's been a great month for interviews this month. Because everybody's at home.
That's true. We'd like to do some interviews in person, but, you know, these work just great. So it's kind of funny that we're going to do fashion next for May for next month.
Yes.
And the guest that we have on does both fashion and editorial or edits. You know, she's an editor. Let me just say that.
She's a fashion magazine editor.
Correct.
And a fashion photographer.
Right. So Robert, why don't you introduce her?
Well, it's an amazing photographer that I've met. Actually, I've been following her for almost 3 years, and I am a member of Breed, which is her educational side. And I'd like to introduce you, Melissa Rodwell from New York City and the editor of Alice Magazine and my future ex-wife.
Hi. What an intro.
Yeah. You don't get that on regular Zoom meetings like this, do you at all?
No. Well,
thank you so much for taking the time, Liz, to come hang out with us in a little podcast in small Oklahoma, which has no fashion industry at all.
Yeah.
No, you're totally welcome. It's good to be here. Thank you for asking me.
I think it's awesome that we're talking to someone in New York City. Are you actually in New York City or one of the...
New York City has 5 boroughs. I'm in Brooklyn, but I live on the water. So I live in Dumbo. So I look straight on to Manhattan.
That's awesome. Wow.
Oh, my God. Now, she's in Brooklyn, basically. So now every time I watch a movie and someone says, hey, dude, I'm from Brooklyn, I'm going to go, oh, my God, Melissa's in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now she's stuck in my head even more than she was before. Awesome. So let's get this thing started. Let's start on the photography side because I started following you when I wanted to do more fashion-related photography. I guess fashion-forward, fashion-inspired. And honestly, I know nothing about fashion. I just like pretty people and pretty clothes. And when I saw your work, wow, there was this excuse me, I get all choked up. There was this one shot that you did of a young lady in a bathroom. And the bathroom was super small. And I just thought, okay, if there's a girl that can make something great out of this bathroom and this hot chick leaning up against the sink, I need to follow her. And as soon as I had some money saved up, I signed up for her breed program where I could get all the back end information that has been very useful for my education. But so as a fashion photographer, how did you get started doing fashion?
My passion, like my lust for fashion, started when I was really young. My mom used to get Vogue and Harper's Bazaar, you know, sent to the house when I was like, I don't know, 9, 10, 11. And I used to take her, after she'd read them and she was ready to throw them out, I would grab them and I would literally cut out pictures and like post, put editorials together. Like even from ads, I would think, oh, this pink dress needs to be in this, you know, this forest, or this, you know, this needs to be on a city street scene. And I was making fashion like layouts very young. So I always knew I wanted to be involved in the fashion industry on some level. Of course, normally when you think that, you think, oh, fashion designer or fashion buyer, fashion merchandising, or working for a fashion magazine. But I was in Paris. My parents sent me away. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and I was very heavily into rock and roll and boys at like 14, 15, 16. And, you know, like just, I was that kid that liked sneaking out and going to see The Who at the Coliseum because that's what you do at 15 years old. And my parents sent me to Europe to kind of get me away from my friends for a summer. And I was, didn't want to, you know, hang out with the rest of the kids on this like tour of like see, you know, 16 countries in 6 weeks, kind of bullshit. Tour. And I like left the group and went out on my own and just wanted to walk the streets of Paris to really absorb it. And I accidentally just walked into this art gallery that had these huge images of Helmut Newton and Guy Bourdin and Christian Wagenheim and David Bailey, all these incredible fashion photographs hanging on the wall. And I immediately said, that's it. This is what I want to do. I want to be a fashion photographer. And that was 17 years old. So I came back to LA and I asked my dad if I could borrow his Canon AE-1 and started taking pictures. That's it.
Wow. At 17, you knew what you wanted to do.
Yep.
So,
Melissa, I want to ask you one question. Can you move your microphone closer to you?
Yeah. Is this better?
Not really, but it's okay. Go ahead.
Really? No. I think I can't tell if my blue mic is on or if I'm just using my laptop. There's a little light. Oh, there it goes. Is that better now?
That'll work. It's not better, but that's okay. Don't worry about it.
It's all good.
It's all good. Yeah.
So the museum thing that you saw with Helmut Newton, did you see all of his erotic pepper shots?
Yeah. I mean, this was when he had released a book called White Women. Those were images from that book. A lot of them were from that book. And then, you know, just Tristan Wagenheim. It was like their famous work. It was like an expose of their work.
Wow, that's amazing. So you came back, borrowed your dad's camera. You know, at 17 years old, I mean, well, first of all, I have to applaud your parents for wanting to get you away from the rock scene and sending you to Europe.
Yeah, because that's crazy.
Amazing. If you hear any noise on my side, that would be Lily Bell sleeping.
Well, I was really mad because I had actually gotten a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts to do their summer intern or their summer workshop.
Whoa.
And my parents wouldn't let me go because it was like unchaperoned. Mm. Little did they know that they sent me to Europe with these four quote unquote adult chaperones who were like literally like they it was like they were revisiting their high school years as well. They were drunk and hooking up with each other and weren't paying any attention to us. It was awesome.
Wow.
Oh my God.
They thought they were saving me from myself. But. It was a good consolation prize, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And you found yourself.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to write that in the show notes. You found yourself in Paris.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy. So what were your next steps? I mean, we have a lot of new listeners, or not new listeners, but young photographers as our listeners. And if they decide to want to get into fashion photography, what kind of direction did you go? Because I imagine you photographed a shitload of rock concerts.
No, I haven't shot a shit ton of rock concerts. I've shot a lot of musicians and bands. I don't really like doing live work. I don't like doing runway. I don't like doing people move, like, unless it's very highly directed movement in fashion. I don't really like
shooting. Yeah, I think you probably like having more control over the person, the lighting, and all that stuff. Yeah, I can see that.
I borrowed my dad's camera and asked my pretty friends and ransacked all of our wardrobes to put little shoots together. But I very quickly realized that the pictures I was taking weren't looking like the pictures I was seeing in the magazines that I had collected all those years. So after high school, I went to an art college, and the art college the photography program really wasn't strong enough. So I grew up in Pasadena, the suburb off of LA. And they have an Art Center College of Design there, as it so happens, which is one of the best colleges for photography in the country. And it took me three times to get in because my work was so avant-garde. But I finally took like some night classes up there, learned how to light a toaster, believe it or not, and then submitted that as my portfolio, and I got in.
Now, what did you say? You said you learned how to light up what?
A toaster.
Toaster.
Oh.
Toast, like a toaster oven.
Right.
Like, I was turning this very conceptual, very avant-garde fashion photography, and they were like, no, you're too weird. This is too arty. You have to learn how to light stuff. You have to learn how to light. So I'm like, okay. So I took their night classes, and I learned how to light, you know, like a pencil sharpener.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like a crystal glass and things that are very difficult to light,
right,
actually. Yeah. And then turned in this very basic portfolio, and I got accepted. It took me a year.
Wow. And then so you started with lighting first.
Yeah, well, that is photography, I have to say.
Yeah.
If you can't light, you can't call yourself a photographer. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God, I love you so much. Now, when you did this toaster, did you use some strobes and some flash?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That's going in the show notes, too.
My toaster.
Well, we always like to give people a hard time if they say I'm a natural light photographer, and most of the time we've learned that they're just afraid of flash, you know.
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
I was there. I hated flash. I was so afraid of it. But then
it's very intimidating.
It is.
Yeah, but I started Art Center. It was a very difficult school, but the day one they started us on 4x5 view cameras, and we learned strobe lighting in a studio.
Wow.
On a 4x5. Yeah.
But that's a great basis to understand any kind of photography.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And the lighting and using a 4x5 camera where you have no autofocus, you have no aperture automatic control. Everything is completely, if it doesn't come out right, it's entirely your fault. There's no blame in the camera here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy stuff. So let's fast forward 20 years and you find yourself as a successful fashion photographer in New York City. What kind of challenges did you have when you first started, I guess, becoming that professional, that transitioning to the professional, getting paid photographer?
Well, so I graduated from Art Center in 1987, in January 87. And I, you know, I always stuck to my more conceptual work. My work was always, and has always been, a little bit dark, moody, romantic, gothic. I've heard it being described in many ways. Rock and roll gothic, you know, I've heard it just, and also very, like, some people have taken, you know, been not so nice with the description, like it's suicidal or depressing. But I couldn't really work in Los Angeles unless I wanted to do celebrities. And my father was an architect to famous people. Basically, he designed houses for very, very well-known people. And as a little girl, I grew up around the celebrity dumb of Los Angeles, and it just never really did it for me. So I wasn't impressed with it. I didn't care they're just people. And even though my friends, like, I was hanging out at Van Halen's house and, like, watching their rehearsals and going to the Rainbow Room when I was way underage and hanging out with, like, Zeppelin.
Stop. Okay, I'm sorry. You said you hung out with Van Halen and Led Zeppelin?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus. God. Oh, my God.
As just, like, a friend, as a fan of the music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but still, oh, my God.
But that was Los Angeles.
Those are my two top, like, two bands that I just love. And, that's something. Sorry, go ahead.
This was in high school. I have to tell you, this was in the 70s, so just to reference. This was after college. So after college, I realized that I couldn't really work in LA, so I moved to New York in 1987, in the fall of 1987. And, you know, listen, it was hard. I mean, being a freelance fashion photographer has always been hard. It's harder for a woman. It's harder when you have your own ideas. But, you know, I had to conform. I had to learn how to shoot. No, not learn how to shoot. I had to, you know, do a lot of white backgrounds and a lot of catalog and a lot of line sheets, what they call them now, and what e-commerce looks like now. We didn't have those words back then. And then, you know, I got one of my biggest breaks was in 1990. I got a job with Playboy, the Playboy Special Editions.
Whoa. And
I got the gig. I bounced around all over the place because I was either following love or following a band or, you know, like, looking back, I have no regrets. I had an incredible life story, but I wasn't one of these, like, hyper-focused, I have to make it career-oriented girl. I like to go where the fun was. So while I was in LA, I was married to my second husband, who was in a band. I got a gig from Playboy, and it opened a world of opportunity. And from there, I was shooting for, like, 18 different editions, and I moved to Australia and ended up being on contract down there, shot the cover and centerfold of Playboy for a long time. And that was a great gig that opened up, that brought in a lot of revenue. And it also, like, I got to travel out to all these incredible locations. Like, one of my best memories of shooting was I got to shoot in this place in the Great Barrier Reef called Fraser Island, which is like a private island that you can't drive cars on. Like, they flew us in and, oh my God. And, like, they drove us around in these Range Rovers that through these rainforests for like 20 minutes to this the bluest blue I've ever seen in my entire life, with white sand beach around it, like this pond lake in the middle of this rainforest with sun shining down in it and dingoes playing in the sand. It was like something out of a book or, you know, a movie.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I'd shoot these, you know, smoking hot chicks, you know, not wearing much or anything in these great locations. It was fantastic. Jeez. It was a great life, you know.
Let me say this. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, so you were shooting.
Yeah, I was a photographer, yeah.
Okay. I was on Playboy.com trying to find that issue of you.
No, hilarious. Good Lord. No.
No, but I wanted to say, you know how, you know, a lot of people, I've heard some of the Nat Geo photographers talk. It's, you know, they're traveling. They said, don't think that we're just this glamorous lifestyle. You know, it's hard work. I assume that it's similar, but not as grueling, but it is grueling, I would imagine.
You know, so, like, from 24 to 34, you know, I lived out of, you know, I lived out of a suitcase. Yeah. I was always on the road and I loved it. I mean, when you're 24, 25, 26, I was living in Australia, let's see, 30 to 33. I was 30 to 33 years old. Like now at my age, like the thought of getting on a plane and going even to LA for a meeting, is just like,
Yeah.
Because I've done like transatlantic, I've flown to Dubai like 3 times. Like, what is that? A 19-hour plane ride to LA to Sydney. I think it's 19 hours as well. I'm sick of flying. I don't like it anymore. I don't like traveling, but I loved it, you know. And I kind of signed up for this life. Like, one of the things that attracted me to fashion photography was the travel, and I got a ton of it.
Yeah. So you listeners that are, you know, 21 up, you know, 21, 25, whatever, and you're listening to this and you're in Oklahoma, don't try to get into fashion here. Move, go travel. That's what you need to do. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. What about the transition to being an editor, you know, with Alice Magazine?
So that's a longer story. I took a break between 95 and 2000, 2001. And then I started shooting again, and everything had become digital. And I really lost my lust for it because I really loved film. And I really felt like I had honed my skills as a film photographer. So, but you know, I got back into it and I learned digital and I picked my career back up. And, bounced around LA, New York, in Miami, spent some time in Miami. In 2008, I had a husband I'm no longer married to, another one, who convinced me, because I got really dissuaded. I started seeing where the industry was going and it wasn't going anywhere real good with digital. And by that, I mean that, you know, and this sounds really harsh, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but anyone with a decent skill set can pick up a relatively inexpensive digital camera, sort of learn how to frame or compose, obviously they can learn how to expose just by looking at the back of the camera and adjusting, you know, their f-stop and by dialing shit in. And then if they can get a pirated version of Photoshop and learn a few things on there, they can basically produce a decent enough image.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't need somebody like me that really knew how to, you know, underexpose by a third of a stop and push it 2/3 in, you know, and take transparency, 35mm transparency, and develop it in C41, which is just, you know, designed for negative film, and to cross process. And I had learned how to selenium tone and potassium ferrin cyanide toning, and I learned all these great things you can do with film, and that's no longer needed. So I kind of just got really dissuaded and a little bit depressed. So like 2000 to 2007, 2008, I'm shooting and I'm all over the place. And then I had a husband who convinced me to start teaching this online. And at the time, nobody was teaching anything about fashion photography, especially like he came to me with this idea and he goes, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. You need to start telling people about your stories. You need to start blogging about this. And I'm like, blog? What? Like, what's that? I was really just like, eh. But I did. I started the fashion photography blog in 2008. It became very successful very quickly because nobody at that particular time was talking about how to light for beauty, how to light for fashion, how to put your fashion portfolio together. So, and I was giving, you know, BTS scenes of my shoots and all that. So the blog became this huge thing. And then him and I got divorced, and it was not a happy divorce. And I dissolved that company and started Breed in 2013. And then jointhebreed.com is that website. And it's an online educational website for emerging and aspiring fashion photographers. So I've basically been teaching for the last 12 years. And then I got bored with that. And so I always have to be doing something that's like challenging me and visually challenging me. And like, even like, just like, I'm going to start this business and it's going to be really tough and I'm going to start it from scratch. And these are the people I'm going to bring on and let's make this fucking work. I just love that kind of challenge. And it might be the nuttiest, stupidest idea in the world. Like Mel, are you kidding me? Like, this is like the worst economy in the world. And it's always revolved around the fashion industry, which is super hard to get into, super hard to make it in. But, you know, here I go. So I started this magazine, Alice, in like 2016 with another ex-husband, one that I actually is one of my best friends. And we started Alice Magazine as a hobby, as a fun, kind of like, you know, irreverent. Back in the old Cream Magazine days, I don't know if you guys remember Cream Magazine.
Yes, yes.
Magazine. We loved that. We grew up on that. We loved music. Him and I both grew up in Los Angeles. Him and I saw every music show in the world that ever graced Los Angeles. Like, I was there for it all and proud of every concert and even small punk rock show that I saw. And we thought, okay, let's do this like magazine that's going to be a fashion magazine with a real rock and roll twist. And then a year and a half ago, this investor was at one of my workshops and said, hey, would you like to make this legit? And I'm like, hey, yeah, why not? And that's how that happened. So now I'm the editor in chief of Alice Magazine and we're growing.
Wow. So
that's my story. That's caught you up to date.
So let me, I'm, as you're talking, I'm thinking, gosh, has everything she touched been successful? So tell us how many,
no.
What did you do? Name one or two things that you did that you wanted to do that was challenging and it failed. And you were like, oh my gosh.
I can say, and it's taken me a long time. And I might as well just be transparent about it. I have come to the conclusion that if you want a very clear, concise recipe for killing your creativity, go teach.
Mm.
Oh.
Mm.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So I have been.
Okay, you gotta elaborate on that. You can't leave me hanging like that.
Well,
I love to teach.
He does.
So fill me in, but okay, you can offend me. It's all right.
No. For me, it was, I was this role model. First of all, I was the only one kind of producing the content or the majority of the content. So after 12 years, I just got exhausted. And to me, it was like how many ways can you peel an orange? How many ways can I show you how to use a beauty dish for, you know, Paramount Lighting or Rembrandt or Split or Hair Light or how to light a background, how to evenly light a psych. Like, I feel like I've exhausted, like, pretty much everything I know how to do that I can teach anyways. And also, my business, I've always had agents. So, like, my business advice is dated. I haven't had to rely on me pitching for a job in years. And I don't work consistently like I used to because the industry's changed so much. So, but then, you know, like running a business, when you run an actual educational business, like running a college, it does take the joy out of the actual teaching. So the group that we have like on Facebook, the Fashion Photographers Connect, is amazing. It's a small group of people who are there because they love photography and they love to connect. Like the word says, Fashion Photographers Connect. Or Photographers Connect, it doesn't have to necessarily be fashion shooters. I invited my friend that shoots Arabian horses on there. She shoots beautiful horses. I saw you liked one of her images. Like,
oh my
beautiful.
God.
Just amazing.
I actually friended her on Facebook. That was absolutely, but you know, I almost would consider that fashion. It's
exactly.
A horse instead of a girl, but the flow and motion and the story that's built into one image is just so compelling that I have to stare at her images.
We met in a workshop in Bradenton, Florida, of all places, and instantly became friends. And I spent a lot of time on her ranch in the middle of Florida. And her and I would just talk over drinks about how similar it is between directing a model and directing, you know, an object or like a horse or an animal to get them to, it's all about manipulating and charming and coercing somebody to, you know, pull out their, you know, to capture their essence, to capture their aura. It's the same principles. So you're right. The way she was describing how she gets horses to respond to her and her camera, the same principles I use when I shoot with models.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy. And you know, I do want to go back a little bit and just tell you that I completely agree with you. I do enjoy digital photography just because I like all aspects of it. But I feel that a lot of the photography, the magic of photography has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cross-processing that now you start seeing up in filters, which is is good, but it's not the same thing. You know, and I have so many young photographers that I meet that, you know, they're like very much interested and obsessed with shooting film. But the very first thing they do is they process the film and then scan it and then manipulate in Photoshop.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you're not shooting film. You're shooting digital the hard way.
Right.
Okay. You're missing the whole point of printing that image.
Yeah.
In an enlarger and actually processing that paper. You know, and sometimes you get reticulation because your temperatures are not right.
Right.
Or you're trying to do something different with a little bromide or a selenium, you know, bath. You're missing all of that. That can't be replicated in digital.
I 100% agree with you.
But I think a lot of that is because these people grew up on the internet. They need to show on the internet their stuff. They're not going to hang it on their wall because people don't come to their house to be social. They're social online only.
Right.
Yeah.
And right now they're getting that. Like me as an old person, I have never been on Facebook so much in my entire freaking life. I do not like Facebook. I use it as a tool and I try and get off as soon as possible because Jim knows I will go down a rabbit hole and then 4 hours later comes up and it's like, holy shit, I didn't get anything done today.
Right.
I've been on Facebook looking at cat videos.
Right.
And it's insane. And I have to say, Facebook Stories has quickly become the new dating site for the coronavirus.
Right.
That and TikTok. It's like, oh my God, girl, put on some clothes. I'm like, you got your heat turned on your house or what? It's nuts. But now that we talked to Melissa, the fashion photographer, which is crazy, like totally crazy, because I can totally see you rocking a photo shoot at Playboy magazine. Totally. I would love, I'm going to have to go back and research those images now. I'm going to tell my wife it's completely researched for the podcast, but I want to go now and flip to Melissa, the editor of Alice magazine. This is your baby.
Yeah.
This is your style as an editor. You're basically the gatekeeper for content that is disseminated in this magazine. How do you choose what goes in and not? I mean, are you following the fashion trends or are you just doing what you want as an editor?
No, I follow the trends and I also work with stylists that follow it even more closely. So I rely on their expertise. I mean, I used to really, really follow it and not as much as I used to, but they do. So they'll inform me of what's going to be in the stores when the issue comes out, what's coming up for spring and summer, what fall trends are happening. I will look at the Paris, Milan, London, and New York runway shows online now. I don't go to the shows anymore. It's just, it's not what it used to be. It used to be real theater, and now it's just influencers. It's just tacky. But
crazy on that side. I've seen some of the videos, and I don't recognize anybody to begin with, but I do recognize some people that are just like Instagram influencers and that's it.
Yeah.
And they're doing selfies of themselves with the fashion show in the background.
Right. It's really lame.
And I know that, you're pretty and all, but I guarantee you that fashion designer's there for a reason.
Yeah.
You photograph it and pay attention to that.
Right.
Not what your hair flip looks like.
Well, it also used to be more like a mystery, you know, like you had to be invited to the show. You had to be special to get invited and you would see what was going to be premiering. And now, and then, you know, you didn't take an iPhone picture of it and put it immediately up online where they do now. So the whole element of surprise has been taken away and it's become just kind of a mishmash of, I don't know what you call it, but I will look at the runway shows and screen capture the looks I like, the designers who I would love to have featured. And then I send that to them. You know, I have meetings with stylists and that's what we talk about.
Okay. So let's talk about what goes in the magazine as an editor. Again, you're the gatekeeper. You get to choose what happens, what not happens. And I know that you do shoot some of the editorials for the magazine, but what if there's that new person? Cause I know that Alice magazine does take submissions from unknown people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you look for as an editor? Like, I'm sure that your desk is piled full of submissions that you can't sit there and criticize these things. Like, you know, what's your process as an editor? When you see these things, you walk in, there's a big stack of books. How do you choose what's good?
They don't send books anymore. They send PDFs. They send emails, and they'll send a PDF of their story, or, you know, a link to some Dropbox images and small res. You know, it's kind of like an immediate reaction. I have to sort of, you know, you open it up and you look at it, and it's kind of immediately you think yes or no. Like, it's very quick. And I can't tell you, I mean, so let's say if it's a hard no, like it's like, oh no, then you don't have to even discuss why. It's just because it didn't resonate with me, and I just didn't think it was quality enough for the magazine, or it wasn't consistent with our aesthetic. It's not because it was a bad shoot. It might have just not been really consistent with our aesthetic. But if it's a yes, then I have to kind of dig a little deeper. Who are the labels? What are the models wearing? Who are the models represented by? What agency are they with? Where was the shot? Who's the photographer? What's his real portfolio look like? I have to do a little bit more digging. And if they kind of go through a series of a checklist, you know, has he shot for other magazines? Do the other shoots, stand up to this one? Was this just a lucky break, or did he, you know, is he a consistently pretty decent shooter? Are the labels consistent? Are they going to be out in the stores in the near future and not two seasons ago? That kind of thing. Like, I don't want to run clothes that were in the stores 2 years ago. That's not relevant. They call that in fashion irrelevant. So you have to stay relevant. You have to stay up to date. Yep. It's always, they say fashion is about moving forward, not moving back, not going backwards.
So I got a question.
I look at all, if they all tick off, then I accept it.
So now this is me. I don't know anything about this stuff, right? This fashion stuff, right? So I'm a photographer and I send you a photo. And I'm not being a jerk. I'm saying, what does the label and all that other stuff have to do with my images? I mean, tell me how it all works together.
Because fashion is about, you're selling the clothes. So that's the grand mystique with people in fashion photography. Fashion photography is the business of shooting and selling fashion.
Right.
Not
sure.
Models.
Sure. But I mean, like, as far as my quality, does that.
So let's say that you did this really beautiful shoot and all the clothing. First of all, there's looks too. You have to have there's 8 pages or 10 pages in a fashion layout. Every page has to have a different look. So you can't just shoot the same, tiger print, leopard print sweater with the leather pants. It can't be 8 great images of that one look.
Okay.
You have to show me 8 different looks. That's number one. That's on the tick, the checklist. So let's say you send me one photograph of one great girl that's photographed amazing in this outfit, and that's all you sent me. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
That's not a story.
Okay.
Editorial is a story.
I think the difference is that Jim, I think what Jim is talking about is you're talking, Jim, about if you send a photo to her and you're wanting to kind of be judged the photographer. What I was talking about as an editor, like, I would create an editorial. I would set up a shoot, get my stylist, get the clothes, get the brands, the models, and I would send her an editorial spread, like, on speculation.
Right.
Like, hey, I shot this. Would you put this in your magazine?
Okay.
So I'm not sending her like my portfolio to say, hey, I'd love to work with you. Can you send me work?
Okay.
I'm already providing something for her.
She's
looking at the total content to see, will this fit in my magazine?
That's what you guys asked me in the beginning. What about submissions?
Yes.
Now people will send me their portfolios and ask if they can shoot for the magazine. And it's the same thing. I look through the book. Are they consistently strong? Have they been published before? Does their work resonate with Alice? You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
It has to grab me.
Yeah.
And, if I look at one gallery, I don't just look at one image and go, oh, no. I look through it a little bit. But if it's, by the second and third gallery, I'm like, this is not wowing me. Then I click off and that's it. It's a no.
Yeah. Well, it has to be that harsh too. It sounds harsh, but I mean, it's not harsh. You're just trying to run a business, obviously. But it's that's the way it is. You know, when you go to, for example, competition. You know, you go to PPA competition, and they're not going to beat around the bush. They're going to tell it like it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but I totally can understand that, and I think that you're right, Jim. It's, I think it's very harsh, but at the same time, it's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is her baby. Mm-hmm. She makes money on advertising, and those advertisers are going to spend dollars with her magazine. If that magazine is picked up by people, the people are going to pick it up if they have good content. It's almost a revolving circle back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So she has to choose those things for that. So what is the one of the, what's the challenge? What's the most challenging thing you do as an editor for Alice Magazine? Ooh, that was a good question.
I don't like being the guy. Like, I know how hard rejection hurts. It's been very hard to be a young artist and be rejected. So I don't like being the one that says no. That's not fun, but necessary for them to grow. And just, you know, sometimes I call it herding kittens. I mean, dealing with creatives, as you know, it's like 15 different personalities in the room, and you've got to be like, let's rein it back in, guys. Hairstylist has one idea, the makeup artist has another idea. I don't have too much of that anymore. I know how to command my set, but, or somebody sends something that, you know, you send them out to shoot something and they don't shoot what you asked them to shoot. It comes back as this whatever they interpret it as. And even though you sent mood boards and you discuss the hair and, you know, that happened on a shoot that we did that I was very excited about. And I won't go into specifics because if anyone hears it, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it after this. But I wasn't happy with the end all results. And I was very disappointed in some of the people who took over. And I was so busy at the time dealing with like the business end and the printing companies and the distribution companies. And I was learning this whole new world since we've become legit now that I didn't pay close enough attention to rein it back in and say, no, this is my magazine. You will do it my way. Mm-hmm. I just kind of let loose and let them kind of be their creative selves. And the end result, I was not 100% happy with. So it's, you know, you have to always, you know, you always have to be in control and take command and say no and do it in a nice way. Or then you have to become a bitch because let's face it, women are bitches. Men can get away with it, get slapped on the back. Oh, you're such a good businessman. But when a woman does it, oh, she's just a bitch. I don't care. I've gotten used to that label 30 years ago. Call me a bitch. Doesn't even faze me. I'm usually like, oh, that's pretty nice, actually. I've been called so much worse. So, you know, yeah, you just have to you have to really be adamant. And, you know, I deal with the people in the magazine, like a little bickering or, you know, so-and-so didn't, you know, it's like running a fucking daycare.
Yeah.
Moody artists are moody. They're temperamental. I think I said this in a Zoom meeting, and this very famous fashion editor put this meme on her Instagram one time. It was hilarious. She said, "When I die, I want everyone I collaborated with me to lower me into the grave so I can be let down one more time."
Ooh.
Wow.
I thought that was hilarious because it's very true. Like, collaboration can be one of the best highs in the world, or it can be one of the most disastrous experiences, and you just want to run away screaming. And you both know what I mean by that, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I completely understand, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So talking about that letting down, just because, you know, we've already had conversations on Zoom. And I'll make sure I put the link on there for the Fashion Photographers Connect on Facebook. Okay. Because the Zoom meetings to me are very informational, even if I'm not participating. But I do notice that I'm the only one drinking Bailey's in my coffee in the afternoon. But so let's talk about the industry as a whole. You're a photographer. Excuse me. You're a magazine editor with a magazine that is a legit magazine. Okay. So we're not talking about... This is not a vanity publication that someone does online and the models buy a magazine for $20 because their pictures happen to be in there because they had big boobs. This is a legit magazine. Where is the fashion industry going?
It's a good question. It's a really good question.
That's why I asked that question to you because I know you have thoughts.
Well, let me tell you something. One of the, you know, when going back to where you originally, when Richard and I started Alice, it was this irreverent kind of like a little bit of a fuck you to the industry. It was like, I have always been, I'm a nice person. I, you know, deep down, I'm a really nice person. I've had to grow some grit and, you know, I've had to grow some toughness throughout the years. You have to, if you're a business owner, but, I don't like the way the fashion industry treats each other. I don't like the way they treat young models. And I don't like this elusive, glass ceiling, you can't sit with us attitude. So we started Alice as an accessible, you can sit with us. That's our motto. You can't actually can sit with us. We are accessible. We're sustainable. There's no judgment going on. I mean, even though you have to be like, no, that's two seasons ago. We can't run that. But you can do it, you know, you can do it in a nice way. You have to be firm, but there's no reason to be an asshole about it. And there's just no more time or room or money in this industry anymore to be this affected, you know? It's the days of that whole, like, you know, Zoolander of, you know, somebody giving me crazy pills, treating interns like dirt, making people pick up your shit, you know, just those days are gone. And that's not what Alice is about. If they're still existing and they're still going to exist after this pandemic, that certainly isn't the road that Alice is going to trudge, because there's no room in my opinion. And I want Alice to be that, you know, our advertising rates are competitive because we sit on newsstands next to these bigger magazines, but mm-hmm. our ad rates are, you know, 10% of what they're charging. We don't have the overhead and we don't have the suits sitting there telling us and dictating to us what to do. So we are accessible and we want people to get involved with us and communicate and form a community. That's very important to me too. Having a tribe, having a family and a community of creatives, which is why I kept it very much about music as well, was very important to me. And not having just be this exclusive, cliquish, snobby, standoffish, and yet another uptight fashion magazine. I didn't want to be that.
As you're sitting here talking about this whole thing, I'm just picturing that the Devil Wears Prada movie.
Mm-hmm. And that's which is very true to life. You know, unfortunately, that movie's very true to life.
Yeah, you're more the Rolling Stone of the fashion industry.
You got it.
That's what I'm thinking. But the mm-hmm. but the Rolling Stone when it first started.
Yeah, I was going to say the Rolling Stones in the 70s.
Yeah, that was the heyday of rock and roll. Now,
right.
Yeah, let's get discovered on YouTube. Whoopee freaking dude, man.
And, you know, going back to creative or collaboration, like my ex, Richard, who's the creative director, him and I work on the layouts together, and we just have such a great synchronicity. It's a joy to work with him. If you're working with people that are making you want to, like, either kill them or kill yourself, you need to get out. And that's the thing I haven't, like, I've been told, like, you know, nobody gets along in business. Everybody has their own, you know, a lot of companies, huge companies, all the CEOs hate each other. So I bought that fucking bullshit and been miserable in businesses for way too long. And I finally said, I can't live like that. I can't go to bed with this bitter resentfulness. It's like eating me up inside. This is what makes us sick. It's not really anything, you know, it's just this disease of being so uncomfortable because you're so angry all the time at somebody.
Yeah. It's not healthy.
I decided, like, I'm going to surround myself with people that I actually love getting it, because it's not an easy process. Laying out a magazine and going through all that, like the politics and the clothing has to be on point. Styling has to be on point. Everything has to be on point. It's not an easy process. So it better be fucking enjoyable. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of work. You put your blood, sweat, and tears in that baby. You want it to be perfect. But at the same time, you don't need to have a whole bunch of, you don't need to have the step parents to tell you how to run your magazine.
Yeah. The step parents that tell you that you're a piece of shit. And they're doing that for your own good to make you better. It's like, that's nonsense, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's going to build a character. Let me send you to Paris.
Right.
Oh my God. Well, listen, thank you so much, Melissa. It has been eye-opening experience. So where can our listeners find you online?
My photography website is melissarodwell.com.
Just like,
and my magazine is alicemagazine.nyc
for New York City.
That's correct.
I love that. And we'll put those in the show notes so everybody can just click on it and head right there. Okay. So we hope that all our listeners go follow her on Instagram and share some stories. And be sure to send some comments to the editor of Alice Magazine NYC. And Melissa, thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, guys. Great. It was really fun. Thank you for doing this for the community.
I just want to say that I think that this is, as I've been listening, I'm just like so honored and pleased that we got you on here, because I think out of, what have we got, over 300 episodes, I don't know that we've ever had someone with such a you're a freaking celebrity in my book. I mean, you've done a lot of things. You've traveled a lot, and you've done some big stuff. I mean, especially hanging out with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, that was an important
takeaway from this for Jim.
I know, it's hilarious.
But I just want to say thanks a lot. It's great. Great having you.
I was still in high school, Jim, by the way.
Hey, it's okay. It's fine. I didn't get to. I got to see Queen when I was. I didn't hang with them. I got to see them. And
well, I grew up in Los Angeles, so that you have to, you know, take all that into account. It was very much the whole, you know, that's what we were doing back in the day.
Sure.
So, yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot. And
thank you. You guys take care and stay safe out there in Oklahoma.
All right. We really appreciate it. All right, okay. Jim, go ahead and wrap us up.
All righty. Bye-bye. Hey, thanks for listening. You can find Jim at jimfelder.com and Robert at treywickimages.com. Send us an email at twins@photofaxpodcast.com or voicemail at 405-585-6337.
Check out our YouTube PhotoFax channel for weekly tips and tricks. Visit our Facebook page for news and discussion. Please help others find this podcast by reviewing us on iTunes. We really appreciate your support.